Since the dawn of time, time has always passed, and random shit has always occurred. It is as predictable as anything else. There are two things that you cannot beat. And yet, so frequently, we're like, I'm gonna beat time and randomness. I'm gonna set up a plan where it has to be done in a certain amount of time and everything has to go right. And you're putting time and randomness against you instead of putting them on your side.
What's going on, friends? Welcome back to a brand new episode of Dieting from the Inside Out. If you are new here, welcome to the show. I'm Jared. I'm your host of the day. Now, you are in for a very big treat today. For those of you who really jive with like this inner work, the deeper psychology behind why it is you do what you do, why you're struggling, and if you really like this kind of like dieting from the inside out stuff that we talk about, you're going to love my next guest. So my guest today, his name is Mike Milner. Mike is a world-class coach. He is a wealth of knowledge. He has been in this game for a hot minute, especially digging into this deeper stuff like we like to talk about here, which is why I wanted to get him on the show. Mike's a friend of mine. He's a mentor, and he is really, really good at helping people, especially when it comes to this, like I said, this deeper level stuff, the psychology behind why it is you aren't getting to where you want to be, why you sabotage unconsciously, why it's you'll be doing well and something happens, it's like you go completely unconscious and you wind up right back to where you started. So we get into a lot of that stuff. So today's interview is a little bit heavier, a little bit deeper, but I know you're going to get insane amounts of value out of it. So you will want to stick around for the whole thing. Now, before we get into all of the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of the interview with Mike, I do want to have a big thank you to the sponsors of the show. Sponsor number one is FlexPro Meals. I'm telling you, the easiest way to my heart is to feed me. So FlexPro is amazing, guys. You know, I talk about it every week where it's one of those things when it comes to your food, so much of the cases, it has to be convenient. If what you're doing is not practical for your life and is not convenient, you're not going to do it. But the reality is most people are like trying to force this and it's not working. This is why most people struggling who have schedules like mine, that's just crazy. It's unpredictable. You're traveling, you're bouncing around from place to place. You know, like you may like have kids and you're running to soccer practice and dance and school and overtime and work and all this stuff. So you're already spending time in drive-thrus. You're already popping into gas stations to get something to drink and like a protein bar or granola bar. Well, the thing is with FlexPro makes that even easier because they're shipping all these meals. They're ready to go. They're right to your house. They're macro-friendly. They're calorie-friendly. They're made by a chef and they taste amazing. I can't tell you how many times I'm between calls, going on my way out of the house, just getting home, and I just grab one, pop in the microwave 3 minutes, and we're ready to go. And it keeps me in line with my goals. And it honestly also saves me money. If you're into saving money, you're already spending like $14 a meal going through Wendy's drive-thru. And then you have to wait for the drive-thru, all this stuff. I mean, you can't even go into a gas station and buy like a couple bars without spending like $10 or $12. So maybe not bars. It just depends. But you get what I'm saying is it's time expensive and money expensive to just play the drive-thru and stopping in game. So, and at the end of the day, it makes it harder to get to your goals because you're going to be eating way more calories. You're going to feel shittier. And it's just not going to work out very well. So, FlexPro, it just meets all these criteria and helps you on all these different levels. So if you're into that kind of thing, definitely check them out at the link below or go to flexpromeals.com. But if you use my code HamiltonTrained, past tense, there's the button around here somewhere. You'll save 20%, which saves you even more money, which is pretty cool. Then we have our second sponsor, which is First Form. I have the logo with the shirt with a little logo on it today. If you're watching the video, fun fact, you should be watching the video of the show on YouTube, but a huge thank you to First Form because, like we're talking about with life being all over the place and things not being so convenient, we need to put some supplemental things in our day to day. Most people that we work with client wise, have a hard time getting their protein intake in. So having a protein supplement is really, really, really key. Most people aren't getting, they're like 5 servings of fruits and vegetables in a day. So having either like a green supplement or a multivitamin to help with your micronutrients is really helpful. Most people, if you're feeling, you go to the gym after work or first thing in the morning and you're tired, something like a pre-workout helps. Like that's the thing is there are so many places where supplements are helpful or needed. They're never like an end all be all kind of thing, but they just make your life better and more convenient when they are used appropriately. So if you're not sure how to use supplements or where to get started or what you might need, there's a YouTube video below, but also, I want you to have a place where you can go to that you know it's the best what you, it's the best stuff you can get. The quality's there, the safety is there, the accuracy is there. It's been tested, all the things. Because the hard thing with the supplement industry is it's not regulated by the FDA. So this is where a lot of shady shit can happen. So there are companies like First Form who will publish their own third-party studies on the product, their actual brick and mortars versus, you know, in someone's basement or whatever. So I just want to make sure you're getting what is what you need that's high quality, that's going to make your life better and easier. It's not going to upset your stomach. It's not going to make you feel like shit. Because that's the thing, is a lot of supplement companies, that happens. So I want to have a spot where our people, our clients, and like my following can go to that I know they're taken care of. So that's why we work with First Form, and it's the best thing ever. So be sure, if you are in need of that, want to look into that more, go use the link below. And it means a ton to me. And as always, if you ever have any questions, I'm always here for you. Now, before we get into the episode with Mike, be sure and subscribe wherever you're listening to this on. And yeah, I'll shut up now and bring Mike on, and I'll talk to you in just a second. Well, I appreciate you doing this, man. I know this is very long overdue. I've been meaning to get with you and get you on the show, because you and I both talk so much about the mindset, the headspace, the psychology. And because, like, at the end of the day, if that stuff's not in check, we all know that nothing magical is going to happen long term. So before we get into all those goods, like, if you would tell everyone like a little bit about you, like who you are, your story, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I have been in the industry for a little over a decade, started as a personal trainer, found that most people were struggling with nutrition like myself. And that was what led me down the path of becoming a nutrition coach. I now have a nutrition coaching business that I've had for about 5 years. And it's called Pop Peak Optimization Performance. I named it after my grandfather, who I called Pop Up. He unfortunately passed away right before I started my business. So I wasn't sure what I wanted the name to be, but I knew I wanted the acronym to be POP in his honor. And yeah, I mean, it all kind of started for me through my own journey with fitness and nutrition and struggling with body dysmorphia and disordered eating and just a horrible relationship with food and exercise and body image, and led me to a very dark place. I'd been an athlete my whole life and was never concerned about the way that I looked or anything. I just had like the typical like young, fast metabolism until I didn't. And I gained a lot of weight very quickly and did a lot of things wrong. The 1200 calorie diets, restrictive protocols, eliminating food groups, being obsessive and hyper-focused on clean eating and counting macros down to the gram, and, you know, telling friends I couldn't hang out because I would stay home with my chicken and broccoli and all the things. And it just had a significant impact on my relationships, on my health, on my well-being, on my happiness. And crawling out of that dark place was what led me to want to pay it forward. And I didn't know exactly what that would look like, but there was a guy at a local gym, and he was like, "Have you ever thought about being a trainer?" I was like, "Well, I haven't, but now that you say that, it sounds pretty cool." So he kind of showed me the ropes and got me started, and I really haven't looked back since.
That's awesome, man. I love that. I didn't realize all, I knew some of that story, but that's how mine was too, like start off as a trainer and all that kind of stuff. So that's super cool. One thing that you said though, that perked my ears, and I think this is a piece most people miss in this like journey, because I think when people come from a place they've been suffering for so long, they don't realize how bad it really is. It's kind of like watching your hair grow out. You just don't know until it's really long. But when you said that it was affecting all these other areas in your life, your relationships, like your work, like everything. Touch on that a little bit more if you would. Cause like, do you see that with your clients a lot, where their issues, like being stuck, can't get the shit figured out, is bleeding into everything else?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the hair analogy, except for me, it's my hair's falling out and it's happening faster than I would like. It's one of those things where I had a moment that I tell this story pretty frequently. My oldest sister almost lost her life to anorexia, and then she became an eating disorder specialist. So she's a therapist now, like very well known, very well respected in the field of eating disorders. And she sat me down one day for lunch and was like, "Hey, can we have lunch together?" So we go to the restaurant, and, you know, I order a salad, like hold the croutons, hold the dressing, hold anything. Just give me the lettuce and like grilled chicken, but don't cook the chicken in oil or butter. Like, just give me like plain grilled chicken and some lettuce. And she was like, "So actually, this is what I wanted to talk to you about." And she was like, "Have you ever heard of orthorexia?" I was like, "No, what is that?" She's like, "Well, it's when somebody becomes so obsessed with eating a certain way and eating what they deem as clean that it starts to impact their health and their well-being, and it can be pretty severe or significant. And I just wanted to bring it to your attention. And of course, I get all defensive and I'm like, I'm just trying to be healthy and fit. And why can't I, take care of my body and do it, whatever. So completely fell on deaf ears. Anyway, I knew in the back of my mind that it triggered something, because she was 1000% accurate. It's like when somebody pokes that place that you don't want anyone to touch and you're like, no, I'm hiding this for me. You're not allowed to see this. And she exposed it. It was really uncomfortable. And then I started to notice that I was married at the time, and my wife would ask me, you want to go out for date night? Should we book a trip? We love to travel. And I just kept saying no to everything. I was like the worst person to be around, because I felt like if I couldn't control my nutrition, then everything would just fall off. And all this work that, I'd lost like 80 pounds and all of that would go out the window, and I would gain the weight back. And there was so much fear around food. And my wife at the time brought it up to me. It was like, you realize that we haven't been out in like however many months. We haven't booked a trip in however many months. She's like, even when your friends from high school who you haven't seen in years, like you stood them up and you were fine. Like you told them you were sick. I know you were fine. And again, I was like defensive. And it's one of those things where the truth, when it hits you, and you try to push it away, it only is a matter of time until you recognize the pattern that exists. And noticing that there was a wedge in my relationship with my wife at the time, there was a wedge in my relationship with my sister, there was a wedge in my relationship with my friends, and I'm the problem. Like, I'm the common denominator. Like, what do all those things have in common? Those relationships, they all involve me. So yes, I can say that it was a huge divide. And it was something that I really had to come to grips with and face that reality that those choices, and they were not serving me. In like, if I say that I value family, if I say that I value friendships, if I say that I value relationships, and I believed all of those things to be part of my value system, but yet my decisions are completely misaligned. So it creates this internal tension and this internal turmoil. We start to feel anxious all the time. And there's this like low grade stress that's always there. And I had to face it. So we see the same thing with clients. If they feel obsessed and like food has to be controlled at all times, and what do I do if I'm in a social situation? I don't know exactly what I'm going to eat. And we feel, and they start to notice like it's impacting relationships and it's impacting how they show up at work. It's impacting their confidence in other areas. So when we talk about like the mental game, that's why the mental game is where it all begins and has to be the foundation for everything. Because once that cloud is lifted, you're free and you're able to actually prioritize the things that you value. And it no longer becomes a question of, can I go out with my significant other, or can I hang out with my friends, or, spend time with family? Like, that's your highest value, if that's your highest value, and you know where that lives within your life. Well, you can also still prioritize your health and well-being and take care of your nutrition in a way that looks appropriate for you.
I love that so much, man. I was at the dentist yesterday, and everyone knows the last episode of the podcast was on what I learned about not going to the dentist after a decade and how that applies for fat loss. We already did an episode on that. But the reason for the story is I was talking to my hygienist, because like, oh, what do you do? And you're a coach. Okay. And it was this, and she brought up the same concern or issue around this that I feel everyone struggles with. Is she basically said, I feel like I either can do all the things, go to my family events, go on date night, but like can't get my weight under control, all this stuff, I'm a foodie. Or she goes, or I can lose weight and eat right, whatever that means, but everything else in her life suffers, like family, friends. So for you, where does someone even start? Like, they're like, I know, like, okay, Mike, you say that these two worlds coexist, but I'm obsessed with food. I'm scared to eat. I don't even know where to start. And you said there's this magical land where they both coexist and I can have everything I want. Where does someone even start?
Yeah. So it always depends on where they're at. We got to start with your point A, which will look different. And everybody hates the it depends answer. But if I'm plugging, coordinates into a GPS, if I don't know my actual starting point, then the destination is irrelevant. So we got to know where you're at right now. And typically what I look at is, what's the first thing that we can do that is for the love of the process? Like, one small thing that is purely for the love of the process. Maybe it's because, something like a 5-minute walk every day, and you just truly enjoy the fact that you get to unwind and clear your head and get outside for 5 minutes. Like, we're really going to focus on the process. It's not an exchange. It's not conditional. It's, hey, what is something that you want to be part of your life every single day, no matter what? And I call them anchors. These are the things that keep us grounded. When I was going through my divorce, I leaned heavily on anchors because the rest of my life felt like it was spiraling out of control. But I could get my walk in every day. I could still, eat quality food. I could still drink my water. Like, I had things that were mine that nobody could take away from me. So we start with one thing. And to the point about your hygienist, it's like, I have to do all the things. That's the typical mindset. I do all the things and it works and I lose weight, but nobody can maintain all the things because you will always default back to your current foundation. So what we want to do is gradually build up that foundation over time. How do we do that? We focus on one thing. If you do that long enough and you just keep adding one more thing and one more thing, eventually you have this foundation that's rooted in, I eat quality food most of the time because of how it makes me feel. I move my body most days because of how it makes me feel. I actually prioritize stress management and getting enough sleep because of how it makes me feel. You fall in love with the feeling. You know, it's not, I'm only doing this because I care what the scale says. It's not conditional. It's not, I'll do my walk, but if the scale's up tomorrow, I'm not going to do my walk. I'll eat quality food, but if the scale's up tomorrow, I'm going back to fast food. No, it's not conditional. It is purely for the love of the process. And that comes from intrinsic motivation. Intrinsic motivation is, I do this because I enjoy it, because of how it makes me feel. I'm not doing this in exchange for a reward or a treat or a cookie. Like, it's just, that's extrinsic. When we do something for the external reward, then it can be a motivator to get started, but it's short term. Intrinsic motivation is long term. Intrinsic motivation is, I absolutely love, like, I know you're big into jujitsu. Like, you're doing that because you love it. It's for the love of the game. And that's how I am with tennis. I play tennis because I absolutely love it. That's intrinsic. There's nothing that I get. There's no like, hey, we're going to put your name on a billboard. We're going to showcase how great you are at tennis. There's nothing. I don't get anything other than the joy out of it. So the starting point is, how can we gradually move you to a process focused, intrinsic motivated person that becomes the fit individual that you were meant to be? So it's the identity shift that's happening alongside with those little tiny foundational elements, one thing at a time. And that's the starting point that most people don't like to hear.
Yeah, no doubt. Is there anything that you found when someone, let's say someone has spent, like most of the people like in our community, I don't know about yours, has spent the majority of their life in the external side where they're like, been hyper fixated on the scale since they were little, or all they care about is fat loss. And there is nothing intrinsic. They're like, I've never even thought about it. It's always been the outcome. And it's, depending on if the scale spikes, depending on or changes my adherence or not. Is there anything that you could say for people who aren't even sure how to get started? Like, is it like a question prompt? Is it just deeper diving in? What can people like that are listening do that have spent their lives in the outside to start getting intrinsic?
Yeah. I think the hard part is doing that like future self work, which I think is really powerful. Because if it is extrinsic, like, okay, let's start there. You want to lose 20 pounds and that's like the reward. But what is the actual reward of losing 20 pounds? What do you envision as that 20 pound lighter individual? Like, what is that going to unlock for you? And then people will start to identify things that they're associating with fat loss, because it's never just about losing 20 pounds of fat. There'll be, if somebody says, well, I want to lose 20 pounds of fat. And when I picture myself 20 pounds down from now, I imagine that I will be able to be more active with my kids, or I imagine I'll feel more confident in my bathing suit. Or I imagine that, my doctor told me that if I don't do this, that I'm going to have serious health consequences, because there can be fear-based extrinsic motivation. And now we start to identify, what are they associating with that number or with that outcome? And from there, we can then do a separate exercise of, what do you want your future self to look like in terms of like, how do they look? How do they conduct themselves? What are the qualities that they have? What does their nutrition look like? What, you know, really getting crystal clear with details and specificity of like, who is this person and what do they look like? How do they operate? Decision-making, all of the things that make them, they're you, but it's you in however many years. But what is it that makes you aspire to be that future version of yourself? And now we can see if there's any sort of misalignment, if there's things that maybe you were putting weight into, no pun intended, like you're putting weight into something that may not actually be that important when you think about your future self. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. And it all comes down to reflection and introspection and getting real with yourself and spending quiet time to actually unpack those things and maybe journal about them. Or, you know, it does help sometimes where you can talk it out and just do like a voice memo to yourself and then listen back. And sometimes you'll hear yourself say things that maybe are not even your voice, and you'll hear it. You'll be like, well, actually that was my mom telling me to lose these 20 pounds. She's been telling me that since I was 8 years old. As we have a lot of clients that will unpack that kind of stuff where it's not their own goal. Like, I don't even know why I'm saying this goal, because when I hear it, I hear my mom's voice. I don't hear mine. It's like, well, what do you actually want? And now we can go down that path of developing the vision for your future self and then seeing, you know, now we have the destination, we have our starting point, and now we can put the roadmap together to get there.
That's so good. Why do you think so many people are so hesitant to do that deeper introspective work? Like it blows me away. Like I get it from where I'm sitting, but like someone will be so quick to do like a starvation diet or workouts every day or the craziest shit ever. But then when it's like, I want you to sit with your thoughts for 5 minutes, they're like, nope, not gonna do it. Or journaling makes me so uncomfortable. But you'll go like give up all your favorite foods for the next 6 months. Like, I just don't understand. Why do you think people are so hesitant with the deeper work?
Yeah, probably because we don't do a good enough job as a culture, society, as at teaching emotional processing and regulating and sitting in uncomfortable feelings. And so I think that it's something that just becomes our normal operating procedure. Whenever there's an uncomfortable feeling, we're never taught to just sit in it and sit with it and identify it and acknowledge it. Like feelings and emotions. And I had somebody message me today, and the way that she framed the emotion that she was feeling, it was like a problem. I was like, that's an emotion. It's not a problem. There's no such thing as a problem emotion. It just is. And it's like, what your emotion and your feelings want is they want to be heard. They want to be seen. They want to be acknowledged. So we all have our traumas. We all have our baggage. We all have stuff that we've experienced throughout life. And we often just stuff it down deep and we just keep plowing forward. And so when you start to poke around in there and you start to do some of that deeper work, it brings up uncomfortable feelings. It can bring up old traumas. It can bring up old issues that you didn't even remember. And now they're starting to come to the surface. And then when that uncomfortable feeling comes up, you don't have the skill, you were never taught, or you haven't practiced the act of just sitting with it and you know, getting curious about it without judgment, just acceptance and curiosity and compassion and nothing else. I don't think we do it. There's a lot of things that I think, you know, we miss when it comes to education. We don't teach financial literacy. We don't teach emotional regulation. We don't really teach, you know, a healthy lifestyle. And I think that all of that kind of contributes to, well, it must be what I'm eating. It must be my discipline. I'm going to try the next fad diet.
No, man, that's spot on. Something that I've found myself saying a lot is that just suppression never made anything better. You know, avoidance never made anything better. You know, a mental reframe that a mentor of mine has started talking about, like this inner darkness, is he used to call it like inner darkness a lot, but we almost have judgment with that. But he just calls it the unseenness. It's like all it is like whatever that gross stuff is, it's just unseen. It just needs seen by you. That's all it is. So
yeah, as with anything, like when it comes to fear, you're like, well, I need to overcome the fear. You don't have to overcome it. You have to acknowledge it and make friends with it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, we're doing this together. Like me and fear are taking this step together. Is when you run from it, that's when it has power over you. Same thing when you suppress a feeling, that's when it comes back. There's a concept in psychology called ironic rebounding, which is the more that we suppress, the more that the thing explodes back up, even more powerful than before. So they had this whole experiment called the white bear theory, which is like when you tell somebody to think about anything they want except for a white bear, naturally all they can think of is a white bear. And there was a psychologist that ran the study, and he had people like journaling while through the process. And they'd be like, their thoughts would be like, all right, I'm going to think about the sky. I'm going to think about the weather today. God damn it. I can't stop thinking about white bears. They would just, and that's like the ironic rebounding. It's like you're trying to push something away and it just keeps coming back stronger and eventually it will win. So rather than play that game, just accept it and sit with it and get really curious about what it's trying to tell you. And it's funny what happens when you learn that emotions are fleeting and feelings are not fact, and you just can sit in the discomfort, it makes life a whole lot easier to navigate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it was, I heard on a podcast, I think it was Lisa Bilyeu, Tom's wife, talked about these things. She was talking about this stuff, and she views it as a dance. She's like, I dance with it. She's like, I used to run from it, or like, how do I overcome you? It was one of the two. It was either dominate the thing or run away from it. But she goes, you know what? I'm gonna dance with this bitch. And that was her entire model now around the unseenness stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a great way to view it. Like I call it make friends with it, dance with it, however you want to frame it for yourself. Just don't ignore it or suppress it.
Nope. One thing that you mentioned that I always think is a fascinating conversation. And I've never heard your perspective on it. And I'm assuming I'm gonna love it, just be based off everything else we talk about. When you talked about the importance of shifting your identity in all of this, for you, why do you think the identity shift is so important for long-term progress, for whatever, intrinsic, on the external, whatever? But that seems to be now a little bit hotter of a topic. Like I've been talking about it a lot. I know you mention it a lot. Like bigger names like Ed Milet talks about it a lot. Tony talks about it. But for you in this realm, why is shifting your identity such a big piece?
I think it's, you know, when it comes to goal achievement of any kind, your identity is at the core of all of it, because there's several mechanisms at play. If you have a specific belief system about yourself or an identity that you believe to be true, that you hold as this is who I am, and you start to act out of alignment with that, but you haven't actually addressed it. So it's subconscious, it exists within you. And again, this is something that can happen when you're very young and you start to develop these beliefs. And a lot of times it doesn't come from your own perspective. It comes from something that was imparted onto you and you believed it. It became your internal dialogue and you repeated it so many times subconsciously that it became who you are. So the way that my therapist describes it is it's an I am statement. I am not worthy. I am not lovable. I am not good enough. I am not successful. And whatever it is, we have this I am statement. And a lot of times, again, if it's a, you know, a parent or an influential figure, that's where it begins. And then you internalize it and it becomes part of you. Now, when you start acting out of alignment with that, your brain subconsciously is like, wait a minute, there's this dissonance that exists. Like, this is who we are, but this is not what we're doing. And it will try to pull you back into that identity. So a lot of people are like, I don't understand why I self-sabotage or why I have these self-destructive patterns. And oftentimes it can be traced back to your belief system and your identity. So if we don't upgrade the operating system, the belief system, the identity, then the actions will be short-lived. You'll be able to force it. But there's, like I mentioned, there's that internal tension that exists. And a lot of times you don't really understand why it's there, but it's because you're acting out of alignment with who you think you are, who you believe to be, who you believe yourself to be. So if we're not gradually trying on the new identity and ditching the old identity, like that's where the actions have to go side by side with that shift that you're making mentally. I always say, like, the physical process will not last if it's not built on a mental foundation. The mental foundation is who you are and your belief system. So if we're not gradually shifting that and identifying, like, first of all, we can dismantle the old belief system. So if I have a belief system that's like, I am not worthy of love, then I can say, okay, Where did that come from? Is that my voice? Is that somebody else's? When was the last time I felt not worthy of love? And I can go back and I can trace it, and I can think about past experiences that made me feel unworthy of love. And then I can sit there and objectively find evidence to the contrary. Well, I've been in relationships before. I've had people say that they love me. I am a human just like anybody else. And I feel like all humans are worthy of love. And now we can start to find the evidence that stacks up against that belief system, and you can shift the way that you feel about yourself. And then we can start to adopt the new identity, the new belief system that I am worthy of love. I can be successful. I can do difficult things. Whatever it is that you want to believe about yourself, you can make that shift. You just have to have the actions that back up the belief, and those things kind of move simultaneously. You know, I know James Clear talks about casting votes, however you want to frame it, but what doesn't work based off of research is just saying things in the mirror that you don't, at your core, that you don't believe to be true. So if you still hold on to that old identity, and then you stand in front of the mirror and you're just like, no, I am worthy. And you don't actually go through the work of like dismantling the old belief system and then trying to adopt the new belief system and then having your actions back it up. Like, there's no amount of affirmations that can change that. You actually have to do the difficult thing, which is, again, getting internal, getting introspective, finding like the source of that belief system and then dismantling it with evidence to the contrary. And now we can start to rebuild and shift the identity, shift your belief system to something that serves the future version of yourself that you want to become.
That's so good. I love that so much. I can't remember what governing body put the study on or the research on, but I was told that there's research now, whereas when someone does that, they just are like what I call hollow affirmations in the absence of doing the work. Our internal bullshit meter actually makes the identity and everything, the inner dialogue, worse. Because it's like, I'm good enough, I'm confident, I'm worthy. And it's like, no, you're not. You're a fat fuck that hasn't done anything. No, you're not. You know, you're not. And it actually makes things worse than if you did the hollow affirmations.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Cause it's like you're saying it and then your brain is not believing it. So it's kind of tightening the grip on the existing belief.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this then. So if someone's sitting here like, okay, I get it. It's important. Fuck, it's important. How do I even start on shifting my identity? Because I think this is where so many people with this deeper level content and this deeper level stuff that matters most is it's in the world of intangibles. Like, losing 30 pounds is tangible. This water bottle, drinking this, is tangible. But fixing your identity, fixing your relationship with food, that kind of, it's an intangible. So how would someone go about, if we want to call it tangibilizing an intangible, I don't know if that's a word, but like, what are the steps for fixing your identity?
Yeah. So we got to figure out who we are. So try to answer that question. Who are you? It's an awkward one. Like, as a journal prompt, it's one of the most difficult prompts, because it's like, well, I am a mom, or I'm a daughter, I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm whatever. And we start to go there first. And then we typically go to, I'm a dentist, I'm a chiropractor. And then we say like, none of those things are who you are. Like, yes, it's part of roles that you play, but like, let's keep going. And really, it's then peeling back some of that stuff about like characteristics and beliefs about yourself, and getting into experiences and patterns, and what are the things, like, think about moments, especially if you have a history of self-sabotage, like I do. I can look back at those friction moments where I had to start back over and I felt like I was picking up the pieces, and what did I just do? Like, if anybody has ever experienced self-sabotage where it feels like you weren't in control and you almost like wake up back at, like, you know, the bottom of the pit, you're like, how did I get back here? I thought I was going to stop doing this. But though there's so many lessons to be learned in the bottom of the pit. It's like, go back to that place that's really uncomfortable and identify, what did you feel about yourself in those moments? What was the internal dialogue like? Or even now, what's the internal dialogue like when you make a poor decision, or, you know, when you do something that's not in your best interest? What is that internal dialogue like? So trying to peel back the layers to get to your current belief system is a difficult process, but that's like that's the starting point to make it tangible, is start to use that prompt and go beyond the surface, because you're going to start surface level and then keep going. and then think back to those difficult moments and the patterns that have existed in your life, and really start to find existing, connect the dots. Like, there's always going to be common threads that go along with your life, and you'll realize that, oh, this was because I believed that I couldn't do this, or I believed that I wasn't good enough, or I believed that whatever. Relationships leave clues. So those are all ways to kind of figure out what that belief system looks like. Once we have that, then we can dismantle it. Then we can find all of the evidence to the contrary. And that's really like the most important starting point, is peeling that back and figuring out what that looks like for you.
I love that. I think that's such a big piece. Whereas I see so many people have issues being able to figure out what they want, let alone who the fuck they are. You know what I mean? Another thing that the same mentor I was telling you about, his name's Kyle Cease. Kyle talks about a phrase he uses. He goes, I don't care what you do, I care who you are. Like, people are like, well, I'm a mom. Well, no, that's something you do. That's a role you play, like you said. But I think most people are completely oblivious to like who they are, you know? And if we can't do that, then you can't change it. So.
Yeah, completely agree. It's not comfortable. And that's why it's not like, here, eat these macros and do this workout and have a nice day. So there's often resistance, and that's okay. You know, if it's okay to not be ready for that, but at a certain point in time, you'll recognize that that's probably been the thing that's missing. And then you'll go through the process when you're ready.
Do you ever get, when it comes to clients, either clients or just people like getting advice from you, that when you're talking about this kind of stuff, they're like, okay, Mike, I get it. Identity, cool. Inner game, cool. Psychology, cool. But I got to lose this weight now. Like, I got like a vacation coming up, or like, but I get it. I got to do all this stuff, but like, I really need to lose this weight fast. Do you ever have that happen? And like, how do you normally respond to that when they're like, yeah, I get it. This inner game shit, but I got this thing now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So if it's somebody that reaches out and we have that conversation ahead of time, I'll probably tell them that we're not the right fit. If somebody's like, I have a deadline, you know, I've got this event in like a couple months and I just want to get these 15 pounds off for this event, like, probably not going to be the right fit. So that's the first thing. If somebody comes in and they get through our filters and they're like, all right, I got you, but now that I'm in here, tell me how to lose this weight like tomorrow. We just have a conversation about it. Like, we're not here to put arbitrary timelines on things. And another lesson that I consistently teach is trying to fight against time and randomness. And those are two undefeated opponents that have never lost, meaning time has always passed. And if time is not passing for you, then you're not here anyway. So, and random shit has always occurred. Like, those are two things that since the dawn of time, time has always passed and random shit has always occurred. It is as predictable as anything else. Like, there are two things that you cannot beat. You can't win. And yet, so frequently, we're like, I'm going to beat time and randomness. I'm going to set up a plan where it has to be done in a certain amount of time and everything has to go right. No random shit can happen. It has to be perfect. And I'm going to do everything right for this set amount of time. And that's how I'm going to set up my life. And you're putting time and randomness against you instead of putting them on your side. And so when somebody tries to set themselves up that way, I will tell them that we're going against two undefeated opponents. Do you think that you're going to be the first person to beat time and randomness? Like, random stuff will happen. It's not going to be perfect. And eventually, even if we can white knuckle our way through it for a couple months and get you to a certain result, we know that you're not set up for long-term success, because you're going to have to do everything perfectly for 3 months, let's call it. And then what? Then what are we going to do from there? It's like, oh, well, then I'll dial it back and I'll try to find more balance. And it's like, no, you won't, because humans are very poor. They do a poor job at predicting future emotional states. We also do a horrible job of recounting or recalling past experiences. We tend to remember things a little bit differently than they happened. And we also predict things to be either worse or better. Like, we either sensationalize it, like it's going to be the best thing ever, or we overgeneralize that it's going to be the worst thing ever. And most of the time it's somewhere in the middle. So the point is that we're really bad at thinking about after this 3-month sprint where everything has to be perfect, I'll find moderation, then I'll find balance, then I'll find, no, you'll want even more progress. You'll want even more. You'll keep pushing the gas pedal because now that's how you're wired and you got the instant gratification and now it's just feeding that mindset. So to stay, you know, like I never have a problem with somebody who has aesthetic goals or wants to lose weight. If you want to change your body, have at it. I'm never one to tell somebody what their goals should be. I just present the barriers of, hey, this is what you're asking for. I'm probably not the best person, or we're probably not the best team to help you through that, because we really care about the long game and making this a forever pursuit. Through that forever pursuit, yes, there are times where we can step on the gas. There are times that we can push. There are times that we can dial back, but we have to do it through the lens of, we're doing this for life. And if we don't have that perspective, then it's probably not for us.
That's so good. I really hope, David, if you're listening, David's my producer. When you were talking about how much Time and Randomness are undefeated opponents, I want a clip of that so bad. Like that was so, that 30 seconds, 45 seconds was so good. I want a clip of that. So David, if you're listening, I want a clip of that. That was so good, man. I mean, I've never even heard that before, and I agree with it 1,000%. That's so good. So let me ask you this then. So for you, for people that have always used Time and Randomness as a reason for not changing or doing it the right way, do you think that they should just jump in? It's like, get over it, jump in it. Every day that passes is another day you're closer to death. What do you say to the people who are insistent on waiting? Is it just like, I know it's like, from a coaching standpoint, you're not the right fit. So for them, like listening, is it just jump right in? Is it own what you can control and forget what's not? Like, what do you say to the people that are listening that like, okay, what do I do then?
So the person that's like, I want to lose 20 pounds in like 2 months and I'm in a rush and it has to be done by this date. And then they hear that they're trying to go against undefeated opponents and they're like, well, then what should I do?
Yeah.
Then you should focus on the process of what you can control and do it for the love of the process without looking at the 20-pound result. But the other thing is, don't change everything all at once, because it depends on where their starting point is. But assuming that individual has a lot of habits that they could improve upon, they probably have some habits that aren't serving them. So the 20 pounds, and this is why I say like the randomness part is so important. Because if I have all of this stuff that needs to be improved upon or can be improved upon, like I have this 20-pound goal, okay? I know why it matters to me. I know why I want it. And right now, I'm not eating the best quality foods. I'm not really walking that much. I'm lifting weights like maybe once or twice a week. It could be a little bit better. I'm not drinking enough water. I drink too much alcohol. I don't sleep really well. And I have no way of like managing stress. My stress is all over the place. Okay. So that's 7 things, right? And if this person wants to jump in and lose 20 pounds in 2 months, call it, they're going to try to change all 7 things right away. So they're like, all right, day one, they're going to be totally fine. Day one, they're going to eat really well. They're not going to drink. They're going to get to bed on time. They're going to manage stress. They're going to drink their water. They're going to be, you know, walk, strength train, everything. They're going to check every box. Day two, they'll probably be pretty consistent. They'll be fine. Day three, they're going to have an argument with Sally at work, and then they're going to come home and their husband's a dick. And now all of a sudden they're stressed out and they're going to reach for some chips. And now because they missed 1 out of 7, they're going to feel like a total failure and everything is going to fall apart and they're going to go back to their previous behaviors because they haven't changed anything. So there was no foundation. There was no gradual improvement. It was an overhaul. So the random event was like, I got into an argument with Sally at work, or the random event could be your dog got sick, or the random event is, you know, you had a fight with your spouse. The random event is anything. It will always happen. And the random event, if you're trying to change everything all at once, will cause you to fall off completely. And that's why I say, like, have a plan that allows for random shit to happen. The way that you do that is you have your anchors that no matter what happens, I'm still going to get a 5-minute walk in today. I'm still going to eat, you know, some quality food, and I'm still going to drink my water, whatever the anchors are for you. But you're starting with maybe 1, maybe 2. And you build those up over time until they become part of you. And so on the day where Sally's being a nightmare at work and you get into the argument, whatever, you still hit your anchors, even though some of the other stuff may have gone by the wayside. You didn't get it done that day. It doesn't matter. You may have skipped the gym. You may have, you know, had some poor decisions with stress or sleep, but you still hit your anchors. So you still won the day because you know that that's your minimum effective dose to enjoy the process, to control what you can. So it's basically, we're going to ditch the timeline. We're going to focus on the one to two things that we can enjoy about the process. And we're going to solidify those and we're going to do them no matter what. So when random stuff occurs, we're still going to hold on to those anchors as the things that carry us through.
That's so good, dude. That's so fucking good. One question, and it piggybacks off of what you just said really well. Whenever I have like a world-class coach on the show, I have a question I like to ask everyone, and everyone's answer is different because we all agree that like you just finished talking about how important the process is, how much we can tie these anchors that are process based that get us to enjoy it and all these things, and enjoyment of the process being so pivotal. And we hear that term used a lot, enjoy the journey, enjoy the process. But I don't hear a lot of people talking on like a tangible way to actually enjoy the process because most people hate the process. So for you, what are some ways people, like how does someone who hates the process learn to enjoy it?
Well, I would want to know why do they hate the process and what do they hate about it? Because if you hate going for a 5-minute walk outside every day, tell me what you hate about that. You might say like, oh, well, I hate it because sometimes it's really cold here. Okay. Well, is there any value that you get out of that 5-minute cold walk when you come in and like appreciate the fact that you can still move your body and get outside for 5 minutes, even when it's cold? Or can you shift that and do a 5-minute indoor walk and still feel good about it? What particularly do you hate about walking? Or what do you hate about, you know, eating quality food? Or what do you hate about drinking water? What do you hate about, you know, the exercise that you're doing? That would be a conversation where if somebody's like, I just hate lifting weights, be like, cool, don't do that. Like, let's find a different way to move your body that you actually enjoy. There's something there in the process that you can appreciate. Now, like, it doesn't have to be, I think sometimes we get confused that like joy and fulfillment and value or worth or however you want to frame it doesn't necessarily mean that every single day you're going to be like, yes, I can't wait for this 5-minute walk. I can't wait to get to the gym today. I can't wait to eat this meal that I prepared for myself. It's not that. It's appreciating how you feel because you do these things for yourself, not like elation or whatever. It's just an appreciation for the process. There is value that you get from doing these things for yourself. There is a sense of maybe challenge as well. So like I know for me, I don't love going to the gym, but I do love the idea of challenging myself with something that never gets easier. And I think that that's like, if I can do something difficult, even though I'm not like when I play tennis, I get really excited about playing tennis. When I go to the gym, I'm not excited at all about going to the gym, but I go in with the mindset of I get to do something really difficult today and prove to myself again that I can challenge myself, that I can do it and I can push through it and I survive every time. So there's value there. It's not elation. It's not excitement, but there's value and worth and I'll even call it joy, even though I'm not thrilled while I'm at the gym, but there's joy in the challenge. And I think so, you know, it's like when somebody scales a mountain, they're not going through this like grueling process being like with a smile on their face, like I'm so happy that I'm dripping sweat, my muscles are aching. Like they just know that it's worthy because of the pursuit. So I think that sometimes we confuse the idea of enjoying the process of like, I have to be so excited about the process every day. That's just not going to be the case.
That's so good. That mental reframe is so powerful because it changes meanings, right? I think it was it, it reminded me of it's a quote by one of the big boy athletes. I don't think it was Kobe or Jordan. I want to say it was Muhammad Ali that said, I hated every single day of training, but I just love being a champion. He goes like, I hated every single day of training, but being the best in the world, that's all I cared about. And because of that, he was able to go train every day. I think, was it Muhammad Ali or was it, I know you have Kobe behind you, but yeah. Or was it Kobe that said that?
That sounds like an Ali quote. I would bet that was Ali.
Yeah. either all those guys are cut from the same cloth. You know what I mean? So
there is a lot of worth in that though. Like that frame is important. I'm going through a dieting phase right now and I hate dieting and I don't do it very frequently, but there's like the challenge in wanting to see my body change and pushing myself in that regard. I don't like it. Like I enjoy food. I like to eat. I don't like when my calories are low, but I really do get value and almost joy in the pursuit of like, let me see what I can do. Let me see what I'm made of. And I know that it's not, I know that this part isn't the sustainable part. This is the time where like, all right, we are pushing the gas pedal a little bit. And like, I do want to see if I can accomplish this. And then it's just another little vote or body of evidence that I can get uncomfortable and I can prevail and I can be persistent and resilient and all the things that I'm trying to continue to build and reinforce. It's just like another piece of that. So I view it as such. I don't view it as deprivation. I don't view it as misery. It's not fun, but it's valuable, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. For sure. Final question. This could be business, personal, whatever. I know you kind of touched on your dieting right now, but what are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Oh,
just in the life of Mike, whether it be work or personal or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, in my personal life, I could start there. I'm excited because I'm getting married in a couple months.
There you go.
That's a big deal. So, I'm happy with where my relationship is with my fiance. She has 3 kids. That is another process of reward and value and something that's very challenging that has helped me grow in ways that I could have never imagined. And definitely an area that was not natural for me. So I had to develop that skill set and really get uncomfortable and figure out, you know, how to connect with 3 kids at different ages and different personalities. And so that's been a rewarding experience. So personal life, that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm looking forward to. And then business, I would say, you know, things are kind of status quo, but there's some stuff that I'm doing more on the writing side of things, which I really love. I enjoy the creative pursuit of writing. I do it every single morning. And there's more that I'm doing in that area that is kind of developing and starting to become more of a regular theme that I'm pursuing with just another skill set that I've developed that I can pay forward that I'm trying to help others with.
That's awesome. Yeah. If you're listening, you guys should definitely join Mike's email list. Mike has some of the best writing on this stuff ever. Which leads me to the true final question is, where can people find you? They listen to this. They got a lot of value out of it. They want to follow up and like get connected with you and what you have going on. Where is the best place for people to go?
Yeah, I appreciate it. So best place to connect with me on social is Instagram. The handle is @coach_Mike_Milner. And then my podcast is called Mind Over Macros, which is on every podcast platform. And those are the 2 best places if you want to hear me ramble. Usually the podcast is the best place to go. And then you can find everything through the podcast or Instagram.
I love it. And we'll make sure to have all that in the show notes. Dude, thank you for doing this, man. Like I said, it was really overdue and I love what we talked about. And I think this was going to help a lot of people. So I appreciate you doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And we're back. Thank you so much once again for tuning in to today's episode of the podcast. It means a ton to me. The podcast keeps growing and growing, and it's all because you guys are watching, listening, and sharing. So my one ask is to keep doing that. If it's my one ask is, if you got value out of this episode, please share it with someone or share it somewhere. If you're like, yo, this was dope, send it to your friend and say, hey, you're struggling, you should listen to this. Or if you can, screenshot like on like wherever, Spotify, YouTube, whatever, share it on your story. Because here's the truth. I don't want this knowledge to just stay in my head or your head. I do this because I want to help you. I'm going to get this information over to you so you don't struggle. So all I ask is that you do the same thing. If you got value out of this, that means a lot more people can get in your life, get value out of this. So be sure and share it with them so they cannot struggle too. What else we got? Okay. So be sure, sorry, brain fart. So, before we go, I do have all of Mike's stuff in the show notes. Be sure and connect with him, reach out to him, tell him that you heard him on the show, that you really liked it, whatever, however you're feeling. And then, be sure and go give the podcast a 5-star rating and tell me your thoughts. Cause here's what I'm doing. I'm about to start announcing the winners on Instagram. So what I'm doing is running a review contest. So if you go to the podcast, wherever you listen to it on, like Spotify, I think Spotify lets you do reviews now. iTunes is the biggest one. If you leave me a review, 5-star review, and then give me like, tell me in the, like, if it lets you have a description, what you liked about the show, how it was most helpful, how the show's changed your life. Screenshot that and email it to me, jared@hamiltontrained.com. My email's below as well. And I'm going to be picking random winners to basically get a first form supplement of their choice. So I'll let you literally go on the website, pick any supplement that you want, and I will send it straight to your house. So on me. So do that for me. And trust me, it is like pulling teeth to get people to like do stuff like this. So your chances of winning are really likely. So that is it for today's episode. I appreciate the fuck out of you. Thank you so much for being here. Be sure to subscribe to the show. I love you. Talk to you next time.